This podcast is proudly brought to you by MailChimp. MailChimp proudly supports the mission and vision of Wonderroot. I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonderroot programming podcast, and I have the pleasure today of speaking with artists Bethany Collins and Justin Rabideau. Justin and Bethany, how are you guys doing?
Great.
I'm good.
How are you, Floyd?
Doing very well. Always a pleasure to have some time to chat with the both of you. So it looks as though something new is brewing between the two of you, and I would love for you all to talk about it. It's a collaborative project called Too White to Be Black. Let's start there. That title is very provocative, obviously. So I would love to get your perspective on that, Bethany and Justin.
Great. Yep.
Okay.
Bethany, go ahead.
Yeah. So, yes, we're doing a project for the Decatur Book Festival. And so we were looking for, I think, some inspiration and resources to build the project out of. And so we actually found, I believe the website is State of the Reunion, which is very clever. They had a story out of Pike County, Ohio. Is that right? Pike County, Ohio. About two kind of back-to-back towns, one in which the predominant population is white and the other in which the predominant or majority population is black. However, the black community on the one side of that town then looks for all intents and purposes incredibly white, and yet they self-identify as black. And you really couldn't tell it by looking at them. Nothing about them then is kind of an indication, gives an indication of blackness, and yet they are hardcore, steadfast, self-identifying as black. And so actually that title for the piece came out of one of those interviews from that story in which the family, the mother of the kind of matriarch of this family, very much identifies as black. She actually identifies as Negro because of the generation she's coming out of. And one of her daughters identifies the same. The other daughter identifies as white. And she says, there's no other way I can identify. I'm too white to be black. So that's what I'm going with. And there's this then incredible kind of dissension between them. So what I liked about the story then, because all of my work has been about race and identity and boundaries and definitions and along those lines, is this sense of what happened to the rules, right? There's these rules that you follow that tell us where you fall and what community you align yourself with. But this particular community then, there's this kind of utter disintegration of all the rules. There's nothing left. So it becomes this kind of non-logical kind of mess. And so the piece I think that we're working on, and this to me represents the collaborative process, is very structured, which I tend to like, and then incredibly, not unstructured, but there's some fluidity to it.
It's a nice way of putting
fluidity
it.
Fluidity to it that I think, or that I particularly like about Justin's work. So structure and just kind of messiness. That I think we're trying to work with.
It's kind of like a breakdown of the structure of that dynamic. And I think, you know, the story is really fascinating. You know, I heard the part from the link that you sent, and then it also it was recently on a Radiolab episode. And just that dynamic of that self-identifying as one group of people, but then kind of a living in another group of people, I think is really an interesting kind of topic to kind of explore, and how those barriers get broken down. And I think that's kind of conceptually and visually, we're kind of dealing with both of those topics of this grouping, but then also this separation and breakdown of those groups.
Yes.
Justin and Bethany, you all are artists in your own art making, and I was curious about how you all started the conversations around what you were going to ultimately create. Like, what were some of those conversations like as you started to build this rapport with one another?
Well, I'm a big fan of Bethany's work, and I think conceptually we may kind of go off in different routes to some degree, but I think visually and aesthetically, we have a lot of similarities. So we started off with our kind of similarities, and then worked from there into the concept. Wouldn't you say, Bethany? Mm-hmm. So we really, you know, Bethany does this beautiful kind of aesthetic breakdown of words and language on her chalkboard pieces. And really what I'm trying to achieve is kind of this breakdown of materials from these homes that I'm acquiring the wood and other source materials from, and developing kind of a language and dialogue with that deconstruction. So we kind of use that as a jump off point. And then from there, what could we kind of build from that kind of similarity with one another? Wouldn't you say, Bethany?
Mm-hmm. And I think Justin is also much more of a pro at collaboration and has had much more practice. So for me, that was very, I'm just going to say it was a little uncomfortable. Like, where do you get started and how do you find a connection when you're used to working by yourself and it's all about you? And so Justin I would say Justin led that kind of collaborative process and led it very well, I think.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It is always a little uncomfortable, like at the starting point, because, you know, you are, as an artist, oftentimes so used to working in your own parameters. Mm-hmm. So I think but that's the fun point where you're kind of a little off kilter. Mm-hmm. And then you go from there and see where the piece evolves to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It sounds very much like a relationship where you're trying to create space in your life for someone else, and you are trying to work through how that has to get to a certain place to where both of you all feel comfortable. Justin, from a physical sense, when you're approaching art from a very physical perspective, what was it like to try to create space for Bethany in your work?
To me, it was really easy. It was kind of like a natural collaboration in the sense that, you know, I really focused on the physicality of work and, you know, the object as aesthetic and dealing with space as an aesthetic, and how people interact with what I create is very important to me. So adding in an artist that works two-dimensionally, I think just it felt natural because, you know, I have planes and I have shapes that we can work from. So in that sense, it felt very, very easy to work Bethany into the way I create things. Yeah.
Well, the piece that you all are creating, which is Too White to Be Black, I'm curious about how that fits into a larger discussion about race that may be prevalent in a city like Atlanta, where there is a very majority-minority component, I guess, if you will, a very large black population, very large white population, I guess primarily those two. And the subject of race never seems to be too far away from the conversation if you get deeper into deeper dialogue. So I wanted to know, looking at your work and what you planned for this work, what did you want that to speak to in terms of the Atlanta population?
It's a great question. And I think, you know, I think Bethany, maybe you can chime in on it. But in my mind, I think it's interesting that it is a fairly provocative topic. And we are directly speaking about this one specific community. But at the same time, it's, you know, it is a topic that has a lot of importance in our community in Atlanta. So I think it's kind of this idea in my mind about this self-awareness of how we self-identify and where do we feel comfortable identifying ourselves as, because identity is so important in our society. So, you know, the topics that we're kind of focusing on with this community in Ohio, to me, is really interesting because there is this dynamic between this: what is blackness, what is whiteness, what is this idea of identity of being black or white. So I think that topic is interesting to kind of broach into the Atlanta community. But, you know, I'd be really interested to hear mm-hmm. what Bethany has to think.
I tend to work better if I can relate it personally. So most of my work, then, it's about race and identity. And I tend to reference this quote by Rebecca Walker. I think I did it in our last podcast, boy, in which she talks about missing the black outline around her body that it seems like everybody else just naturally has, this clear sense of identification. So for me, then, being black, but also being biracial, a lot of my work has been about this sense of absence and how where's my clear black outline? You know, I have a dotted outline, but it's not super, super firm. And so a lot of my work is about attempting to secure that sense of a firmly defined self for myself. And so stumbling upon this story and having worked in this kind of body of work for some time, particularly my language-based white noise series, and then hearing this story, I think what's interesting about hearing it from the opposite end of the spectrum is that she could identify as black. By all the rules that we've set down historically and societally, she could, and she chooses not to. So it's a very kind of polar opposite perspective. I'm also interested in how we define one another by negation, in a way. Like, I'm not white because I'm black. I am not black because I'm white. And they're polar opposites, and there's no in-between. So what I'm more interested in lately, having worked in this body of work and trying to set my own firm outline, is, well, now that I feel like I've attained that outline, now what? What's next? And so there's some space in that story that I find really interesting. There's some breakdown of these really hard and fast rules, and there's some space in there, if that makes sense. Yeah. Did that make sense?
Makes sense.
Okay.
In looking at the subject population that is from Ohio that sort of started this conversation that became the article that helped define this collaborative project that the two of you all are working on, Bethany, I wanted to come back to you and talk about identity and what informs one's identity in that context of race. And I wanted to know if you could probably speak to that from a personal level, or maybe just being able to pull things out of the text that you're referencing. What informs identity, or maybe even the choice of what someone self-identifies as?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was the 2008, 2009 census that they had the big campaign to count me black. I think that's right. So they had a rally downtown and in several other major cities, very much advocating for people who could identify in a different way to still identify as black, to align themselves with that community, because that sense of identification has very then real ramifications politically and economically, et cetera. For me, that has never been a choice. I have always identified as black. And I think some of that comes from coming from Montgomery, and that sense of very strict dichotomy of black and white in that space. But I also think it is both an internal and an external kind of decision, in a way. It's something that we self-identify as. It is also something that the collective identifies us as. And there's some kind of negotiation that happens between there that's often unspoken, but very real.
And Justin, on the flip side of that, as you interpret perhaps that conversation, that internal conversation, or even that struggle for some people, as an artist, when you receive all of that, that energy, and when you are processing that, what goes through your mind when you see that?
You know, I think, you know, you could take race in some ways and replace it with sexual identity or some other ways of how people self-identify that is very personal. And I think anywhere that you kind of put that context in there, there's a really interesting conversation to be had about our social kind of constructs and how we are perceived by others. And I think, you know, the really interesting part about, you know, this conversation is that that to some degree we have the ability to kind of self-identify just in depending on where we kind of are in our situation. And I think talking about that and opening it up for discussion is important as an artist. I mean, I think artists by nature deal with difficult topics, and this topic is definitely something that is difficult to work with. But it's also, I think, a source of inspiration to some degree, because it is talking about self-identifying and where we feel comfortable within our social structure and where we feel comfortable within our society. This story in Ohio is in ways very bittersweet, because in one case this person is not wanting to self-identify as her family identifies. So it's sad in the sense that she's not willing to be comfortable within that her structure, but at the same time she's also has the ability to identify however she wants to identify. So I think it's just it's a tricky place to be, but it's also an interesting conversation to start. Mm. And as an artist, as a musician, as a poet, as a writer, we kind of can delve into those areas of our society and kind of expose them in new ways. When somebody sees a piece of art that deals with a topic that's difficult, that alone may break down a barrier that they may not be able to break down in normal society. So that conversation might open up in a kind of a more organic way than if you were to be directly asking somebody a question about how do you self-identify racially or whatever, or how do you perceive yourself in society. So I think, you know, in a way, an artist can kind of be subversive in a sense and kind of create something that then breaks down a barrier for and opens up a dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Well, moving away. No, that didn't make sense, Justin. It was good. Moving away from the art making to the placement of art, this exhibit is going to be on display at the Decatur Book Festival, and this represents a new path for this particular event. As it relates to, I guess, an expansion, if you will, moving into the visual arts. So how does it feel to be a part of this new page in the Decatur Book Festival's history?
It's great.
It's very exciting.
It's very good.
I think when I heard that Decatur Book Festival was going to add art, it made perfect sense. Mm-hmm. The more that we collaborate and the more cross-pollination between all the arts, I think it's just you're going to end up with a more dynamic program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how do you plan to talk about your piece in that context? I'm very curious, as we just talked about sort of the gravity of your work, and you put that along with all of the festive nature of the Decatur Book Festival, how do you anticipate dialoguing with passersby, people who stay around for a while, anyone who interacts with you and your art? How do you perceive that process going?
I don't. We talked about this, whether we wanted to sit behind the booth and talk to people about the work, and I don't know that I do. I would much, I think, rather prefer to have the story play. We're still working this out. But I think I would just like to have the story playing so they can get it for themselves, take a listen, see where the influence came from or the inspiration for the piece. I don't know that this is a conversation I really feel the need to have a verbal articulation about. I feel like that's what the work is, and that's enough for me. Hmm. I think Justin feels differently.
A little bit, yeah. I think it's a really interesting story. And for me, the story is the entry point for the art, for the general public. So I think actually it's a great idea. We haven't talked about it, but to have the piece on a loop with some headphones for people to be able to sit and listen if they want, I think we should definitely do that. See, we're just strategizing as we're doing the interview. But no, I think the entry point is the story. Mm-hmm. And I think through the story there comes understanding, or if not understanding, at least some form of entry point for the audience. And, you know, what better venue to tell a story than at a book festival?
Oh, that's true.
Very good point, Justin. stories and books go hand in hand, obviously. But maybe there's a variety with how people can interact. So whether it's on their own or whether it's with some guidance, there seems to be some wiggle room there.
Yeah, I think for me, and you know, working within museums and galleries, there's always this play between the active and passive viewer. And you want to cater to both, because some people want to be very much a passive viewer. They want to come and see the work in their own terms. And then there are others that are hungry for knowledge and really want to be informed when they see the work. So in any instance, when you're displaying work, I think it's important to cater to both those audiences.
And I think that's a great place to leave it. Justin Rabideau and Bethany Collins are the collaborative artists behind the work Too White to Be Black, which will be on display at the Decatur Book Festival. And before we leave, let everyone know how they can get in contact with you and find out more about your work, your individual works, I guess.
My website is BethanyCollins.com.
And you can check out my work at JustinRabideau.com.
Justin and Bethany, as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Floyd.